We've been looking at the letter to the Philippians. We've noticed the word kenosis in the Greek, self-emptying, and we've been reflecting on this. Now we come to self-emptying and freedom. Luke 13 and verse 1. At that time, some people were there who told Jesus about the Galileans whom Pilate had killed while they were offering sacrifices to God. Jesus answered them, "Because these Galileans were killed in that way, do you think it proves that they were worse sinners than all the other Galileans? No, indeed. And I tell you, if you do not turn from your sins, you will all die as they did. But what about those 18 people in Siloam who were killed when the tower fell on them? Do you suppose this proves they were worse than all the other people living in Jerusalem? No, indeed. And I tell you that if you do not turn from your sins, you will all die as they did." She was a lovely little girl, so helpful to her mother and a great companion to me, helping me do odd jobs round the house with her own little hammer and screwdriver. And then one morning, it seemed to change. At first, I felt certain that our little girl had been kidnapped and replaced by some depraved urchin from a female detention centre. But no, it was Charlotte who was storming round the house, slamming doors like some demented harridan. What is it about adolescence? Some say it's hormones, others are psychological change. Either way, it would tax the patience of a saint. But the question is, what to do about it? When Charlotte was a little girl, whilst having fun, there was a tighter discipline. She did ultimately what Edwina or I told her to do, or made her do. Her nature seemed to respond to this, and anyway, we were bigger than she was. When she became a rebellious teenager, we adopted a different strategy. Relying on the values we had fed into her as a little girl and trusting they were hidden deep down in this horrid adolescent somewhere, we held the ring but gave her enough space to find herself and to come to her senses. I guess we could have chained her to her bed, but we deliberately relinquished, one might say, emptied ourselves of these kind of options. This emptying, this kenosis, this relinquishing of power is to copy the behavior of God. Suffering in the world poses a problem which prevents many people believing in God, and even if we do believe in it, it pulls the rug from under us sometimes. The claim by Christians is God is all-powerful. Otherwise, what guarantee have we that goodness will ultimately prevail? But also the claim is that God is total love. Now, pain and suffering in the world undermines these claims. If God is all-powerful, he cannot be all-loving, because he doesn't use that power to prevent the existence of pain. And if God is total love, he can't be all-powerful. His love would mean God would want to extinguish suffering, but his failure to do so shows he doesn't have the full power and ability to do this. But in the case of humans, God appears to have limited, emptied himself of his total freedom to act as he wishes in order to give you and me genuine freedom to respond to him or not, to love him or not. Because if he forced us to respond to him and not ever reject him, that would be a robotic response, not a loving one. For true love must be able to be withheld as well as given. The process of rejecting God allows human beings to do evil acts, which cause suffering in the world. Pontius Pilate's secreting of disguised agents among the crowd in the temple, and then assassinate particular ones at a given signal, referred to in our extract from Luke's Gospel, is an instance of this. We seem, by and large, to accept the presence of pain and suffering in the world caused by human agency as the price paid for our genuine capacity for freedom of choice and the ability to love. We find it harder to account for suffering caused by natural disasters like earthquakes, the one in Italy, tsunamis, fires in Australia, or the Tower of Siloam falling and killing 18 people. But suppose a similar kenosis, or self-emptying by God of his power, has taken place in order to give the natural, non-human world a degree of genuine freedom, in a similar way to that afforded to you and to me. This would show consistency. Christ emptied himself of certain powers to die on a cross as the victim of human powers. He also thereby experienced suffering himself. Prior to this, and still, he has, like the parent of an adolescent teenager, emptied himself of certain powers to allow you and me genuine free choice and the capacity to love. When we choose to hate, he will feel the same pain as such a parent, and so enter the hurtful suffering of being rejected and seeing his protege go astray. Perhaps he has also emptied himself voluntarily of complete control over the development of the natural world also. This too means he will share the joys but also the pains of that natural world. Science observes a randomness within the natural laws of physics. Such random systems have both energy and what we might call a pattern. The future behavior of a chaotic system is not predictable, but it is confined within such a pattern, a large but restricted range of possibilities. The range of possibilities is restricted by God, the outcome by the freedom he has given to the system. If God has given the natural order a share of power, he's partly self-limited or emptied himself of some of his power. No longer can God be held accountable directly for all that happens. Human freedom can mean love or hate. Natural freedom can mean genetic mutations giving new forms of life, or malignancies like cancer. There is an unavoidable cost attached to a world allowed in part to make itself. Lions will kill their prey, volcanoes will erupt, and rivers will flood. The cross of Christ is the outcome of God's self-emptying in relation to human freedom, and humans emerge partly by God's self-emptying to allow nature to produce humans, as well as earthquakes and collapsing towers at Siloam in Jerusalem. So the challenge again for us is, what do we do with our power? Do we impose it relentlessly on our children, workmates, neighbors, school friends, pets, animals, environment, as an act of hubris and domination to make ourselves feel big and cover up our inadequacies? Or do we, for the benefit of others, give them and our environment a degree of freedom that allows them to become who they have the capacity to be, rather than the people or things we would prescribe them to be? Can we let go a little? Can we enter kenosis, a self-emptying, voluntarily of our power, in order to empower others? This is the challenge of the self-emptying of the cross, as the cross is a sign of the self-emptying nature of God.